This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's our source for news, for weather, for sports, and entertainment. And it's a crucial part of our diverse media ecosystem.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so what is it, right? You won't believe the issue that is uniting Republicans and Democrats to work together. You're saying, what could that be, right? I mean, you take a look at how fractured our country has become over politics. And even things that are absolutely saying that most people should be able to agree on, they do not. That was Massachusetts Democrat Senator Ed Markey talking about the benefits of AM radio. We're going to discuss that coming up right now. First of all, good afternoon. It's good to be with you. I'm Drew Mariani. I want to thank you for joining me. I'm in studio today with my colleague here, Preston Alex. He's Chief Financial Officer here at Relevant Radio. And we were talking the other day about the future of AM radio. And I don't know if you have a new car or if you're thinking about getting one. There's a thing called microtransactions, where the future of cars are going to be that you have to pay for everything. You want heated seats? That's extra. But you're not going to pay for it outright. It's a monthly fee. You want an AM radio in your car? You want Relevant Radio? You're going to have to pay for that. I mean, these car manufacturers start charging you for all these upgraded features. You can have high beams, but if you want to buy Xenon headlights, well, that's going to be a microtransaction. I'll do a show on it at some point in the future. But I want to talk about AM radio because there's something going on that I don't think a whole lot of people know about it. Ever since the car radio was invented, ever since the car and the radio, let me put it this way, they've been paired up. And Chevy was the first to put a radio in a car in 1922. It wasn't the most convenient since the antenna took up the entire roof. But a huge battery, they had huge speakers. 1930 was the first year commercially viable radio was available. And then from then on, AM radios began to become a standard part of your car. You probably remember the AM in your old Mustang or whatever type of car you had, right? We've always had AM. First, FM came about 1952. Today, of course, we're moving to the digital arena, right? And those digital technologies are taking over. And there's talk that AM radio may go away. A couple theories here on it. Some argue it's an attempt to silence conservative thought and conservative talk. Most conservative radio is, not all, but most, is on AM radio. Look at the religious radio again. Relevant radio is predominantly over AM. I don't know whether that's the case or not. Is it more of an economic reason where car manufacturers are saying, we need to find other ways to make more money? I was having lunch with our marketing guy today. I was picking his brain. He says the airline industry's changed. I said, I got to go to Philadelphia next week, and I'll tell you what. They charge you for everything from your bag to your seat location to your seat. It's $22 for the window. It's $26 for the aisle. It's like, it's getting crazy. He goes, Drew, they make billions off of that. Car manufacturers are thinking the same thing. But here's the big question. Outside of economics, outside of politics and ideology, what about national safety? I'm joined today by Preston Alex. He understands this better than most. He's been studying it, and maybe you can unpack it for us. Explain what's going on and what looms.
So there are different car manufacturers that have committed to pulling AM radios out of cars. Tesla's one of them. Ford is committed to next year starting to pull AM radios out. Right. Other various manufacturers have said, we're going to wait and see, but we probably will. Yeah. And they're citing all sorts of issues with interference with car batteries and things like that. But I think ultimately this is about the microtransactions that they're trying to work towards, and it's about money for them.
So on that point, Alex, let me just press. Let me jump in. Lee, who we work with here, is another one of our colleagues. He says, as an engineer, he's like, that's crazy. He says they could. Yeah, the engineers all say, if you want to keep AM in the radio, you can keep AM in your car
without a lot of crazy expenses. We're talking, new cars are 40,000 plus.
Yeah,
and to add a little minuscule interference modulator is fine. Yeah. It's not a big deal. This is about them wanting to kill radio. Yep. And the senators and the representatives, I think, are doing a really good job recognizing that there's a national interest in keeping AM radio in cars. And it's one of the few issues that Republicans and Democrats are coming in agreement on. And they actually introduced a bill. So the bill is called AM for Every Vehicle Act. And Senator Markey and Ted Cruz, two people that are diametrically opposed politically are coming together to say, let's keep AM radio in cars. And they're doing it because they recognize the safety. And people don't realize this, but at nighttime, AM radio, unfortunately, depending on what station is, some stations have to power down, but other stations can power up. And they can cover half the country at nighttime. There's no other ability to reach that many people with any other technology. Cell towers don't go that far. You know, anything that's landline, you have to have power that works. Anything that is FM does not reach that far at nighttime. And so AM radio is in a particular special spot. So if there's a cyber attack that takes down half the Eastern Seaboard, you know, all of a sudden a station from Tennessee can broadcast and you could listen to what is actually happening and travel away from the danger because it will be in your car. Wow. You know, that's going to be, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future. But if we have the AM radios in the car, it's for safety. It's like having a safety belt. This isn't about government control of the car industry. This is about, you know, requiring safety belts in cars. That's the equivalent of AM radio in our emergency broadcast system right now.
You know, to your point, I think WGN is a flamethrower. It's out of Chicago. It goes a great distance. KYW, I think it's 1210 in Philadelphia. I will sometimes hear in the state of Illinois or Wisconsin. I remember times where I've been able to pick that up. It's halfway across the country.
Halfway across
the
country.
I mean, it's insane, the power.
Hundreds of miles.
And the reach. And to your point, so I don't know how close you're following this. Where does it stand? You don't really buy into the thought, hey, this is a way to silence conservative ideology. You really see it more as an economic driver for a lot of these companies.
I think that's the reason they're doing it. I don't think they're trying to silence AM radio hosts. I think they just want money.
Yeah.
That's me personally. You know, I mean, anybody that looks on the outside would say, well, we want relevant radio to stay on, so let's support this bill. Yeah. You know, we want...
So to that point, I mean, talk about that for a moment, because it's to me, it's a no-brainer. Just, I'm not saying this because we are broadcasting over a lot of those type of affiliates, but, you know, to your point, if there is a natural calamity, in the middle of this country, there's a danger zone. There's a thing called the New Madrid Fault, went off in the 1800s, mm-hmm. and... it would create devastation in the Midwest. San Andreas Fault on the West Coast. You've got the Gorange Fault off of the East Coast.
The Yellowstone supervolcano.
Who knows?
There's so many things that
could
happen.
But you're right. Asteroid, a war, anything can happen, right? Disease breakout.
And AM radio is best suited to take care of the communications of those for long, like massive distance communications. And so we're just asking anybody that's listening now, call your representative or senator, tell them to vote yes for this AM for Every Vehicle Act. It's just a common sense bill that will be great for relevant radio, that will be great for safety and America, and I support it 100%.
So what would happen if something like this happened to relevant radio? Say AM went away. What would that mean for our listeners?
So majority of listeners we've seen from surveys listen to relevant radio through AM radio. Yeah. And so without that source in the car, and they listen by and large to AM radio in the car. Yeah. And so taking this option away from people is going to take away the opportunity to find us and to be evangelized. I mean, we are here to evangelize. And there's so many people that accidentally find us and then are coming back to Mass, that are coming back to confession, that are coming back to God because this service is available. Because once you take the AM radio out of the car, you take out the ability for the Holy Spirit to reach that person.
Amen. Here's two things I'm going to recommend. One, the Capitol switchboard. The phone number for the Capitol switchboard is 202-224-3121. That's a U.S. Capitol. 202. Write this number down. We'll put it on our Facebook page and our Twitter as well. 202-224-3121. And you're going to get the Capitol switchboard operator. Just tell them what state you're from. Say, I don't even know who my representative is. If you do, you can ask for them, okay? But if you don't, they'll direct you to that office and just say, hey, I just was listening and I understand that AM radio, there's a bill being presented right now. Do you know the bill number by any chance? I think I have it.
I don't. It's just the AM for Every Vehicle Act.
That's exactly what it is. Just say, hey, yeah, I want you to support that. And and you know, if enough people call the representatives, they're going to make a note of that and they're going to say, you know what? Because it's a no-brainer thing, but that's another point
that they need to hear that we care about this, because the senators might not know, oh, this might be a die in tech and nobody cares, but people do care. I can't tell you how many people I've heard that said, I bought a Tesla and I didn't know it didn't have an AM radio. I'm actually really upset about that. And then they went back to Tesla and they're like, well, we can maybe arrange something where you could get one for $250.
Wow.
I didn't know that. It was insane. It was like, they're like, this is ridiculous.
So how likely is this going to pass? I would think it would, but you know, Preston, I sit back here and I think sometimes things that are so common sense due to you know, the fractured nature of our political culture today, sometimes don't. I don't know what would oppose
this. It's going to be the automaker
lobbyists
that are going to go in there. So, you know, if it's up to the people want it. I can't imagine the people being against this. You know, for the minimal incremental cost of AM in a car, it's like nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not hurting anybody financially. So the only thing that this, if anything, getting rid of AM radio is going to hurt you in the future because you're going to have to start paying for more dashboard services.
So true.
I mean, it's in the public interest to have this pass.
No, I could AM for every vehicle. The AM for Every Vehicle Act of 2023. That's what jot that down. The AM for Every Vehicle Act of 2023. The Capitol switchboard again is 202-224-3121. Tell them you want to support it. Now, if every one of our listeners did that, I think
they'd pass.
Yeah, you're not kidding me because we're in states all over the country.
I'm not even kidding that. Yeah, I think if they saw that, people would be shocked at how many people really appreciate people like Relevant Radio.
Do you know the timeline on the bill? I mean, when does it go?
It just got introduced literally 2 days ago.
Yeah, so this
is pretty new. You know, so I haven't heard any rumblings on it on how many senators support this or don't. But I have several quotes from various representatives that say that this is just common sense legislator. And I think over 100 legislators signed something that recommended that automakers keep AM. Now, whether or not they'll vote yes, I don't know. But there is enough people that think that this makes sense. So I think it has a chance.
All right. Grab a quick call and I'll let you go. Ron is in Los Angeles. Ron, go right ahead. You're on the air with Preston.
Good morning, Brother Drew.
Hey.
My quick question is, in AM radio in general, are they planning to just put AM extinct, or is it just a car radio issue?
Right now, this is just where cars are pulling AM radio out of the cars. They can't make AM go away. But if you take away AM from cars, the cost to maintain the towers and electricity and all of that, you can't make any revenue if you don't have the AM radios in the car. So they'd effectively kill the industry.
It's true.
So yes, it is just a car issue, but it would be a crisis in the industry without AM radio in the cars.
You're not kidding. Hey, well, thank you very much, Ron, for your call. It's a great question. I never really thought of that because how many people are going to run out and buy an AM radio, right?
And that's actually why it's so much more important that it is in cars, because they don't have it in the home. So if you need to find out what's going on in an emergency, you can go out to your car and it will always be there and reliable for you to tune in.
So I said there were two points. One, call the Capitol switchboard. I'll give you the number again. But the second point was this: download the Relevant Radio app, okay? Because this is a failsafe. You might buy the Tesla. You might get that Ford. You might find out your car doesn't have it. We have to let everybody know about the mobile app. It's great. You can listen to it anywhere. If you're listening on AM, you're saying, the signal's a little sketchy, a little scratchy. Mm-hmm. Use the app. The app is a great way. You can connect it to your car radio in a lot of cases, but you can also just listen to it on a set of earbuds or however you want to listen to it. But download the Relevant Radio app, Google Play, the Apple Store, and just type in Relevant Radio. It'll come up. You're going to love it. We're actually doing some work on it right now, and it's going to be exciting. So you're going to see some great stuff there. And again, call that Capitol switchboard right now. I'll give you the number one more time. It's the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act of 2023, 202-224-3121. And just tell your elected representative you want them to support that. Preston, let's stay on top of it. Keep us up to speed. Let us know.
Thank you so much for all you do.
I really appreciate you being in here. That's Preston Alex. He's our chief financial officer. He's been following this well before it became even a news story. It's about 16 minutes after the hour. I'm going to take a short pause. When I come back, how about this? Having a child is expensive, right? There's a move right now to make birth free for American mothers. We'll talk about that and more when I return. Feel free to join me, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Our conversation continues right after this.
All the news and issues
now
that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I see my phones are pretty busy here. I'll just give you a quick telephone number again. I don't know why my call screen is swamped right now with a lot of calls coming in. If you're looking for the Capitol switchboard, 202 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. It's called the AM for Every Vehicle Act of 2023. And that is a bill that could either protect AM radio in the country and preserve, I think, national safety, and also a great platform for dialogue and exchange, or it could be compromised. We'll continue to follow that story for you, and if you have any questions, that number is sent over to our call screen. And you know, Patrick, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you the story. Maybe we can get it up on our socials. So if you follow us at Drew Mariani Show, or if you follow us on Facebook as well, either Twitter, you can tap into this article. I'll share the article that's being proposed, okay? That we'll get that up in a moment. But right now, let me talk about one other thing with you. Free birth. I've had five kids, right? And Preston, who was just in here, I think he's nine. I think Patrick Madrid is 11. I mean, there's a lot of kids, you know, in some of these families here. And it can be expensive. One of the key reasons, I think, why women ultimately today seek abortion is because they say, I'm single, I have no money, I can't afford to raise a child, can't afford to give birth. When you're on welfare and you're working a dead-end job, or even if you're just in the middle of middle class and you got debt, or you're in school, you have financial problems, it's easy to make a decision like that. So that's why I think it's one of the reasons. One of the reasons I think abortion can be tempting. One-time payment and you're done. Of course, there are pro-life pregnancy centers that help out a lot of women, not just with baby items, but with rent and utilities. I think we need to support them. And instead of giving $500 million to Planned Parenthood, I'd much rather see it go to some of these centers. But that's a whole other topic. One of the biggest costs, though, is just giving birth. And if you've had kids, you might know what that costs. Doctor bills and hospital bills can mount up in tens of thousands of dollars, and especially if there are complications or the baby needs to stay there longer, they can... Yeah, it can go six figures. Even women who are insured can pay thousands of dollars in copays. And right after Roe fell, some pro-life organizations, they wrote a white paper proposing that the U.S. make anybody who's pregnant in this country, you make that birth free. And right now, about 40% of births are paid for by Medicaid, and covering all the rest of them would increase the federal budget by, they estimate, about 1%, another $40 billion, right? I don't think that's very much, to be honest with you. I mean, we left $85 billion worth of military equipment in Afghanistan when we left. We just left it there, right? How about $40 billion so mothers can be open to life, you know, so that our population can remain stable? There's a lot of benefits to this. I'm joined by Tom Shakley, Chief Engagement Officer for Americans United for Life. And you can learn more about them, too. Check out their website, AUL.org, AUL for Americans United for Life.org. Hey, Tom, thanks for being here today. Good afternoon.
It is such a pleasure to speak with you.
I'm delighted to have you here as well. Let's talk. I mean, it's a great idea. First of all, I hope it becomes a reality. What would making birth free do? I mean, using taxpayer money, what would that say about giving really birth to our society as well? I mean, give me your view on the story, where it is, whether we're gaining traction, and how you think it'll unfold.
Yeah, you know, we believe making birth free is a matter of justice. We also think it's a good social policy. It makes sense. It made sense certainly when Roe v. Wade was still around. It makes a heck of a lot more sense now. You know, you mentioned some of the reasons people might choose abortion. And the pro-life movement has done so well for 50 years in providing people choices, true choices, alternatives to abortion. We founded 3,000-plus pro-life pregnancy resource centers across the country. That's a tremendous achievement. But now, in this era when Roe is gone, it's time to use our power, to use our power through state policy, through the government, to ensure that it's not just voluntary, private, charitable, philanthropic resources that are supporting the cause of life, supporting the cause of families, supporting the cause of childbirth as a national imperative, but that we actually do this as a matter of state policy. We think it's so compelling, and there's so many reasons to do it, especially at this time when childbirth rates are cratering, when abortion continues to be a social scourge. We think it's time for the government and for the state at the national level, not just at the state level, to signal, no, children are a good. They're not just a choice that some people make. They're an objective good for our nation. Yeah. And in fact, our national prosperity is bound up with the strength of our children and our mothers and our fathers and our families.
It's such a great point. I could not agree with you more. And I think the U.S. right now is slightly below replacement rate. That's normally 2.1 births per childbearing mother. And we see what's happening in nations like, you know, China and Russia and Italy and a lot of other countries who are having these demographic winters, Japan more than anybody else. I have a regular guest on the show, Wesley Smith, brilliant writer. He isn't convinced. He's concerned that, hey, if we get $40 billion from the government, there might be strings attached. Do you have any concerns in that arena?
Well, you know, I love Wesley. I follow his work well, and I know him here in Washington, D.C., and he and I continue to talk about this. I think he's a great interlocutor on it. I get where he's coming from. 100% the concern that if we, you know, invite the government, if we invite the state more into healthcare, that maybe there'll be negative consequences. I know Wesley's concerned about the possibility of coercion.
Yep.
But, you know, what I've said to Wesley and what I say to others is the healthcare sector is already shot through with government involvement. And in fact, you know, if you think about it from this perspective, how comfortable would you be going into a hospital if it weren't government regulated? You know, those are called Planned Parenthoods. You know, there's no regulation. There are no health and safety standards. There's nothing. So, you know, in a certain sense, we want the state in its proper form to be involved with healthcare. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a very natural thing that we desire. But as far as the negative effects that I think Wesley and others think, well, maybe this could happen, maybe that could happen. The reality is those things are already present. And what we need to do now is to put in place national policy that fixes those concerns, things like coercion, right, where young nurses or doctors are being coerced. They're being told your conscience rights are null and void. You don't get to say no to abortion. Well, we can fix that right at the same time that we make birth free by saying that, no, the child and the family are the center, as Catholic teaching says, right, the fundamental unit of society.
Yeah, my guest today, if you want to join us, join him for a few moments. Tom Shakley, Chief Engagement Officer for Americans United for Life. We're looking at an idea that I hope gets traction. I think it's a great idea. It's making childbirth free. And, you know, I don't know. There probably hasn't been any studies done on this. I mean, do you think that lives will be saved if this is available? I think that's one of the reasons some mothers abort. I do know some families that say, oh, we already have two kids. We just can't afford anymore. And that to me is always the most mind, you know, baffling to me, because I think you already have kids. You know, that's right. A human life. Yet economics do play a role. So you, in some respects, well, this would be I'm assuming a victory for life.
Yes, absolutely. I think at a broad level, you think just about like economic principle, right? And it's, you know, it's a truism that, you know, the more that you subsidize something, the more that you get, and the more you tax something, the less of it you get. And so at a broad level, we have that. But then at a very practical level, you know, one of the things I've shared with friends of mine who are social conservatives or Christians and have questions about this is, I say, look, you know, there are all sorts of public goods that we provision as a society, right? You know, public schooling is an obvious example of this, right? Everybody pays their property taxes. And even if you don't send your kids to public school, hopefully you have school choice in your state. But, you know, the idea is that we all benefit at least. And we could do the same thing with promotion of families through making birth free. But the effect of this is sort of finally, this is a kind of a social policy or welfare that works in the favor of big families and frankly, conservatives and Christians and others, where even people, you know, you think of the stereotypical, you know, liberal in Portland, Oregon, who's gone out and sterilized himself because he thinks the world is going to end and that it should end with him. Right. Well, by making birth free, he still, through his taxes, pays for the good of the whole country and the growth of families, right? People who still have an epistemological kind of optimism about the future. So I think it just makes sense.
Well, let's grab a call for you. Mary Ann is listening in San Juan Capistrano, California. Mary Ann, hi. You're on the air with Tom Shakley.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is something that I haven't yet been able to give a lot of thought to, and I'm sure there are pros and cons for it. I have 4 children, 9 grandchildren. I'm all in favor of some kind of support for that. However, I would not want the government to be in control of the process. I don't want us to go back to the era when doctors, for example, were in control of births. Women didn't have choices on how they could do things. They were knocked out. They had the baby. It was over. I wouldn't want the government to say this is when and where and how our children could be born. I'm more in favor of government support in some form like I'd like to see in schools where people had vouchers and they could use those wherever they wanted, then the schools would have to be better. And in this case, the doctors would have to be better to receive those vouchers. So I also would not like to see the government benefit from the medical profession any more than it already has. I mean, right now, I think the doctors are almost being turned into secretaries because of what the insurance has, you know, the government has determined could be insurance policy. So I just, I'm just very nervous about.
Well, Marianne, thank you.
Birth.
Yeah, let me let Tom respond because I only have him for a moment or two more. Tom, you heard her position. I've also heard some people voice concern outside of the one she brought that this could also, there's an argument, some people would say this could be a step towards government, you know, and almost socialism, you know, taking care of the birth of a child.
Right.
I don't necessarily see that, but to Marianne's points, maybe even the socialistic concerns that some people have.
Yeah, I think, Marianne, I totally hear where you're coming from, and I agree. I mean, I think the key to implementing something like making birth free through Congress would be exactly that. It would be making sure that this isn't something where the government is dictating or coercing either doctors or the healthcare industry or patients, but instead that this would be something that empowers mothers, fathers, and families simply to have the peace of mind that they can know, you know, that whatever hospital they go into, and frankly, even if they don't want to give birth in a hospital, if they have a very healthy pregnancy, that there's no risk factor to, and they don't feel the need to be in a hospital. You know, our proposal from Americans United for Life for making birth free says that families, sort of like sort of a similar principle to, you know, things like child tax credits or school vouchers, that parents, families should be able to go to a birthing center in their community, or that they should be able to hire a midwife or a doula to be at home. And so it's all about empowerment and choice in our vision.
Yeah, well, Tom, thank you. Marianne, thank you for your call, too. I do appreciate it. For more information, I'm assuming you guys are writing on this at American United for Life. Can people just check you out at AUL.org?
That's right, yeah.
That sounds great. Tom, thank you. Keep up your good work, okay? We'll talk again soon. We'll see how this shakes out.
Thanks very much. Be
you
well.
Got it. A little bit of good news, though. Like I said, I hope it becomes a reality. I think it'll benefit the country. I think it'll benefit families. I think it'll benefit mothers. And most importantly, it'll benefit children as well. So, hey, earlier in the week, we had the opportunity to speak to Dr. Paul Kengor. And we took a look at politics. And during one of the breaks, I was talking to him about the president and boycotting the Olympics. And Dr. Kengor actually wrote a really interesting article on that. If we can find it, we'll see if we can get it up for you. You know, in 2024, the Summer Olympics are going to be held in Paris. Great place for it, right? Well, for a moment at least, the whole question of whether or not there will be transgender women, and when I use that term, meaning men who say they're women competing, that's moot right now, okay? It's moot. There's a group called World Athletics, which is the international governing body for track and field, and they've come out and they said, any man who's transitioned to female after he has reached puberty, he's not going to be able to compete against women. And okay, great. That's common sense, right? I think makes a lot of sense. And a lot of women are probably saying, wow, thank God. Really, real female athletes are happy with that decision because they know any man who identifies as a woman is still a man. And statistically, he's bigger, stronger, faster. And no matter how much Adidas or Target or any other big company says that the sexes are interchangeable, anybody who has two brain cells to rub together, as a friend of mine likes to say, knows that is not the case. So even if you're a male swimmer who ranks 264th in the nation, if you decide you're female, you're gonna probably beat most of those women in your field. You know, and I'm looking at you know, William Thomas. He goes by Leah Thomas now, as a point in case. You know, that's his case. And I think he's deprived a lot of women of scholarships and a lot of other victories. But, of course, this administration's all about transgenderism. President Biden has called it the civil rights issue of our time. And even has a man who he thinks is a woman in his cabinet. You know, we're talking about Rachel Levine. But here's a question to think about. Just ruminate on this for a moment. Since the Summer Olympics in 2024, that's right around the corner, they're not going to allow men to compete under the guise of being a woman. What is the administration going to do? This is the greatest civil rights movement of our day, the president says. Should we as a country, should the president say, you know what, I'm going to boycott these Olympics? Olympic boycotts are you know, they're a long-established custom starting back in, you know, before the Second World War. The U.S., Russia, Israel, a lot of other countries have all boycotted them for one reason or another. So my question is, will the president do the same next year? What do you think? I find it hard to believe he's going to do that, you know. But you never know. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor, who is a professor of political science, has thought about this. He actually wrote about it. And, of course, he joins us today. You can check him out at the American Spectator. He recently wrote a column, and you can find that there. It's spectator.org if you want to check out the website. Hey, doctor, welcome back. Thanks for your writing. Thanks for challenging our thought.
Yeah, hey, Drew. How's it going, dude?
It's going well. It's going. I love what you wrote, because it made me think. I thought, you know, the president's never going to boycott those Olympics. But then again, he should. I heard him say this is the greatest civil rights, you know, issue of our day. So Is there any indication that he'd even consider doing the games? Again, this is an election year. Or is this just, you know, in your column, you say it's all, you know, tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, well, so I haven't seen any indication yet, but yeah, I put readers here through a kind of a thought experiment, right? I mean, presidents, leaders have boycotted the Olympics for what they consider are great moral causes. And, you know, the United States boycotted the 1980 Summer Olympics in Moscow because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in December 1979. The Soviets, in turn, 4 years later, boycotted our Olympics in Los Angeles. And, you know, this has gone on a number of times. The Biden administration had to consider this in regard to Beijing. And so I played this out and I said, well, if Joe Biden really believes, as he says, that transgender rights are, quote, the greatest civil rights issue of our time, that transgender people represent, quote, our nation's very soul, that transgender people are made in the image of God. And by the way, you know, we believe that all human beings are made in the image of God, right? Sure, yeah. But for him to say that when the book of Genesis said, you know, God, he made them male and female, right? He made us one way or the other. He didn't give us the choice of the option to choose among 70 different gender options. But you know, our Catholic president says this, and so, you know, you know, Title IX, he's fought for transgender athletes to compete in sports. And you had mentioned Leah Thomas, right? He now calls himself Leah. I think you have your numbers right there, Drew. He went from something like number 260 ranked male swimmer in America to number one when he, quote unquote, became or identified as a female. Yep. And I should point out, too, that he's attracted to girls.
Yeah.
In fact, Riley Gaines, who's the Kentucky swimmer, the female, one of the things she said in protesting you know, William Leah Thomas identifying as a male or identifying as a female is that she said, you know, he's in the locker room and he's looking at us, you know, while we're getting undressed. And she said, and no one will say anything.
Wow.
The coaches won't. No one will. She said, we're all offended. All of us female athletes, we just feel, we feel shame by this.
Yeah.
He's ogling at us and no one can say anything because they get attacked. So, and Biden defends that. Our Catholic president defends that. So if he sees this, you know, disqualifying transgender athletes as some kind of modern form of apartheid or bigotry, in violation of, you know, the greatest civil rights issue of our time, as he's been saying since the day that he was vice president, you know, way back then, you know, Transgender Visibility Day he honors. He made Rachel Levine, the former Richard Levine, his deputy HHS secretary, a 4-star honorary admiral of all things.
Crazy.
So if Joe Biden really believes this stuff, and it's not just, you know, pulling something here on the LGBTQIA plus community. He should step up and man up and be true to his convictions and be a real leader you know, protest what the Olympics have done here. This is a great injustice
Let's say the U.S. does, right? Let's just say, okay, the president says, no, I'm serious about it when I say this is no joke. You know, this is the greatest civil rights issue, and we are going to boycott the Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
What do you think the reaction from other countries around the world would be if the U.S. did something like that?
Well, they probably think we're out of our minds.
Yeah, they already
do. But, I mean, this would be, I think, comparable to an Olympic committee, you know, banning certain athletes based on race or color, at least in the mind of the rhetoric, okay, of Joe Biden. Now, I don't believe that, right? Because, you know, I think, transgender identifying athletes, you need to compete based on your biological sex, right? So I don't think it's tantamount to a civil rights issue in the sense of based on race. But Biden seems to think that it is, right? I mean, if he's calling this the greatest civil rights issue of our time, then this would be comparable to some form of apartheid, some form of equivalency to a form of, you know, racial-like bigotry. And so if that's the case, if Joe Biden really believes this, he ought to be out leading this crusade, man. You know, he ought to be stepping forward as leader of the free world, leader of America, and saying, enough is enough. You know, I quote Winston Churchill in my piece, you know, never, 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 right? So is Biden going to truly walk the walk here or not? What is our Catholic president who says these folks are made in the image of God? What's he going to do? I think he should boycott the Olympics if this is what he really believes.
Well, it's an election year. Do you think he's playing, you know, do you think it'll get him votes? Do you think he thinks it'll get him votes? Let's put it that way. If he does do it.
As I said on your show a few days ago, Democrats are going to vote for Joe Biden no matter what because he has a D next to his name.
That's right.
And it doesn't matter that he's running against Trump either. As we talked about a few days ago, here in our home state of Pennsylvania, they voted for John Fetterman over Mehmet Oz.
It's crazy.
Who has none of the character flaws that Donald Trump does. And Fetterman, during the debate that we all watched in the state of Pennsylvania, couldn't even read his opening statement from a teleprompter that they gave him during a debate. So Democrats are going to vote for Biden no matter what he does. I mean, Biden could come out and say, and already has, the most outlandish things you can imagine, and they're going to vote for him anyway. So I don't think it would cost him any votes, at least not from his people, from his constituents.
Do you think we'll get to the point where other countries, when they start to get infected with this ideology, will then say, hey, you know, we're going to allow trans athletes to play? I think the athletes themselves, many would probably boycott the Olympics. I mean, they trained for years to achieve this level of excellence and to represent their country. And what a mess that would be. You know, we know the doping situations, with Russia. We even saw some cyclists from the U.S. doing that. We know how people cheat in the Olympics. It'd be really easy to pay, you know, one of your citizens, say you're Russia or China, to get a man, you know, to claim that he's a woman and to be able to compete, you know, whether it's shot put or whether it's, you know, wrestling or whatever it might be. You know, who knows what the area of the competition would be.
Think about wrestling, right? Martina Navratilova, who's a feminist and a liberal and a tennis legend, but she's totally against these transgender athletes competing. And she points out it's cheating.
And so is Bruce Jenner.
I mean, it's not just like, it's even worse than taking steroids. I mean, you know, this is a biological male of all things doing this. And imagine something like wrestling.
Yeah.
And there's also, what's the wrestling called where it's not on a mat like collegiate, but with kicking, MFA, is that what it is? I'm not sure.
MMA, the mixed martial arts.
Yeah, that's it. And imagine you have these biological males identifying as females going in there and Drew, they're beating up girls.
I know.
They're beating up girls. And then these guys who identify as female will claim that they're being bullied. If they're not allowed to compete, they're the ones who are the bullies. I mean, didn't their mothers teach them in kindergarten that you don't pick up a girl and body slam her?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are bullies. Yeah. What's this is madness?
Yeah, I just look at even Leah Thomas or, you know, whoever, what is William Thomas, what he did in terms of swimming. So, you know, whether you're not body slamming.
225.
Yeah, if you're not body slamming somebody else, you're depriving them of legitimate competition and of a chance to really compete fairly. And I think that's
and
unjust.
And a scholarship. I mean, imagine your 5'6". 110-pound daughter.
Yeah, I know.
And I had a daughter who swam and a son who swam.
Right.
And you know how they train,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Two-a-days. Yeah, sure. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. Imagine her going all the way and doing all of this stuff. And here she is. She's on the verge of, you know, a scholarship to a major D1 school. And she loses because a 6'3", 225-pound guy, you know, who has to shave every day, you know, smokes her in the pool. It's not fair.
That's so true.
This is the position of our Catholic president. Yep. And at least the Olympic Committee came up with some common sense and said, no, we're not going to do this. Yep. Clearly, Biden disagrees. So why doesn't he come out and make a stand?
My guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. I'll tell you what, I'll open the phones. I only have them for a few moments today, but I had to take a break. When we come back, we'll grab a couple of your calls. Feel free to stand off, share your views, ask your questions. If you agree, you disagree, you're more than welcome. The number is 888-914-9149. You can get in right now. 888-914-9149. Chapel of Divine Mercy is also about 15 minutes away, and we'll be praying together. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Getting you connected. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Get connected. Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. About 10 minutes away, we'll pray the chaplet. It's good to be here with you today. If you're just tuning in, I want to get you connected to an article written by Dr. Paul Kengor, and you can find this at the American Spectator. And the web domain for the URL for that is just spectator.org. And he wrote an article asking the question, will Biden boycott the Olympics? And there's a big issue that has come up right now over whether or not we should allow transgender athletes to compete. They're not going to compete in the Summer Olympics. So should the president boycott? The president has said, you know, going back to his time as vice president, he's called transgender rights the civil rights issue of our time. And you know, to Biden, drag queens are akin to modern day Jim Crow and Dred Scott. There's so much confusion going on right now. We see what's happening in the administration. I don't think he's going to boycott the Olympics, but as Dr. Paul Kengor points out, he probably should. Doctor, a couple things here. I mean, we've talked about that, and I'll take a call or two in just a quick second here. I want to bring something else in. A couple days ago, yesterday, the day before, I think Adidas, Target, some major corporations were taking heat because they were selling clothing, trans clothing, to kids. You know, there were breast binders and all these other things that were going on. There was one image of a man who was in a one-piece bathing suit, but you could see his bulge, basically, fundamentally. And I'm thinking, you know, just sitting back here trying to think about this rationally, it's like, why are you advertising women's clothing using a male model? One, right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna pay a price for doing that. We saw what happened with Bud Light. But point two, you know, I think the gay, the homosexuals in this country are, what, 3-5%, whatever the number I think is inched up from before. But the number of those with this gender fluidity, you know, issue, those who, you know, believe that they are another sex, those who are trans, it's got to be fractional of even the very small percentage down there. So why as a corporation would you go ahead and spend millions of dollars targeting your advertising to such a fractional base? I mean, maybe 1%, less than 1%, whatever the number might be, and offend the 99, 98, 97% of the rest of the population. Economically, it doesn't make sense either. What is it about these big corporations? What is it about this movement that has got such traction that companies are doing cartwheels to try to capitulate?
Well, they're woke and they're run by the kids right out of the universities. That, you know, the woman who did the Dylan Mulvaney thing for Bud Light,
She went to Wharton School of Business and an Ivy League school.
Yeah.
And, she doesn't realize, she doesn't go to NASCAR where they drink Bud Light, right? She doesn't go to football games. She doesn't go to the beer distributor in my little town. Yeah. These people are cultural revolutionaries. And they're completely disconnected to this. They have no idea what's going on whatsoever. Yeah. And women feminists, they ought to be outraged by this. And by the way, the numbers that you were giving, Drew, I've seen some frightening numbers where upwards of 30 to 40% of Americans believe that gender is not biologically determined, right?
Wow.
That it's a social construct. Those numbers get worse and worse every year. And as far as, for the longest time, I remember these debates really well in the 1980s and 1990s. We said that the number of people who were homosexual or bisexual was probably like 1 to 3%.
Right.
And the gay lobby said, no, it's 6%, maybe as high as 10%. Remember? And some of these were like Kinsey Institute numbers that Judith Reisman and others said were flawed. Now, among Generation X and Z and whatever, the numbers are like 20 to 30%.
Wow.
And so clearly, we thought this was biologically determined, right? Like sexuality, at least some people did. But people are being cultured into this. Scott McKay, one of our writers at the American Spectator, wrote a piece last week about this Hollywood mom. I can't remember her name right now. She said, "All of my kids are gay." And she has, I think, 3 kids. And Scott pointed out, he said, no, 3 out of 3 of your kids being gay would be 100%. That is not statistically possible.
Wow.
You liberals all told us for decades, right, that it was 10%. And we all said that was too high. We said it was 1% to 3%. You said, no, it's 10%, 10%, at least 6%. Well, this woman, it's 100% in her family. All right. So what's going on there? Right. What's going on there? And so groups like Adidas and others, they hate it when you accuse them of grooming. Right. But this is beyond accommodation. They are influencing. They're not just reacting to the culture. They're influencing the culture. And women, feminists ought to be stepping up and saying, don't you dare have some guy who identifies as a girl. Advertising tampons, okay, or advertising bras, okay, that's the modern version of blackface, right there.
Yep.
Drag queen story hour is like a version of blackface.
Yep.
It's men dressing up as women and denigrating women.
So true.
This should be offensive to people.
It's so true.
And it is offensive. It is offensive.
It's
but
so
not
true.
To our Catholic president.
No, not at all. Sandy in upstate New York, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a slightly facetious but slightly practical answer to the transgender athlete problem. I think if we had 2 divisions, one called XX and one called XY, then people with similar chromosomes could compete without putting a gender label on it.
I love it.
Amen.
I know you're facetious, but I have often said that. The science is the science until the science isn't the science, right? I mean, that's great. Your chromosomes don't lie. They without question, tell you what your orientation is. So, or what your gender is, I should say. So, I love that.
Well, here's another facetious take. How about if women like Riley Gaines and some of the others insist that they ought to be allowed to start taking steroids? Because the males that are competing against them have an obvious cheating advantage. And even then, no matter how many steroids Riley Gaines might take or pump into her body, she's not going to be able to beat a guy who's 6'3", 225 in the pool.
Yeah. Yeah.
She'll never change her chromosomes.
That's so true.
Right, exactly.
Well, Sandy, thank you. You know, the other thing is I heard somebody make this point. It's not mine, but I thought it was a great point. Who wins in this? To your point, like, where are the feminists? Where are everybody? A man who wants to become a woman, he's the one who wins the wrestling match or the swimming meet or whatever it may be. It seems that men are the ones that become victorious. Women are the big losers in this exchange. A female woman who now identifies as a man and wants to compete, You know, she's not going to be able to compete in football. She's not going to be able to compete at the same level or same skill set. And I don't think a whole lot of guys make a big deal out of that because, you know, she's not threatening their scholarships or you know, or winning the tournament. So it's the women. This is an attack on I think, womanhood more than anything else. And yet it seems that, you know, feminists and a lot of women are blind to this.
Well, and you know, Drew, a real man with genuine masculinity, all right, would not be out trying to beat girls, competing against girls, and then puff himself up and go put a medal around his neck, right, and stand there next to the girls with a big grin on his face like this conqueror, right? That's not manhood. That's nonsense is what that is.
Well, Doctor, I'm grateful for your time, as always, and for your writing. What are you working on now? Anything else coming up?
Always doing a whole bunch of different things, and I'm actually going to be releasing through Emmaus Road Publishing,
okay.
I think it's in July, a book on the church and slavery, Drew.
Wow.
You'll be very interested. The Catholic Church has an amazing record that no other institution can match on that issue.
And it goes back centuries, not even here in the States, right?
It goes back over 1,000 years.
That's amazing.
It really does.
I cannot wait. When's that going to hit the presses?
I think mid-July, but we don't have an actual release date set in stone yet.
You always amaze me how quickly you can crank out a really quality piece. So,
well, I'm passionate about it.
You moved up into one of my favorite authors. I love it. Always good stuff.
Well, thank you.
Well,
thanks.
Hey,
and include me in your divine mercy intentions because I need it.
We're going to pray right now, and I know everyone who's listening will do the same thing. We'll lift you up right now. We're about to pray the chaplet. Hey, Doctor, thank you. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
Thanks, Drew. I'll tune in.
You got it. That's Dr. Paul Kengor. Let's say a prayer for him now. If you want to join me for the chaplet, these phone lines stack very quickly. Here's how you get in. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll take 5, 6, 7 calls, see how many we can get in, and we'll share your intentions. Stay with me.